Hey, everybody. Welcome to the ANN After Show. Happy to be back. I'm Lindsay Loveridge, Executive Editor of Anime News Network. And with me is Jackie Jing, who's just some really good music right now, I think.
No, I was just excited. Lindsay's back. Yay.
And James is here. He's toughing it out for us. He's feeling a little not great. So, like, you know.
But I can't miss out on everything that's going down because I don't know if you guys noticed, there's a lot going on in Attack on Titan lately.
A lot.
This was a huge... Okay, so I didn't get to be here for last week, which was really disappointing for me because I would have made a ton of jokes about Eren, like, losing his
head. Oh my gosh. And,
you know, how it was such a head spinner and all those other sorts of things.
You missed the wonderful
you saw the birds,
I mean,
comparison, right?
Lindsay? The birds comparison?
The birds and Ernie.
Oh, yes, yes, of course I watched that.
Okay,
clip.
I was
that
like...
That was really good.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And the whole interaction, James like brought it up like just casually, and then I started dying laughing, and he was like, how dare you like insinuate that there's they look alike, and I was like, I'm leaving.
I just got confused, guys. You're like,
yeah,
identical related pictures.
Anyway. Gabby like one shot no scoped him. It was crazy.
It was pretty sick, I'm not gonna lie. It was one of the it's, you know, when you watch as much anime as we do, it can be hard to be surprised by things, you know.
Yeah,
we've seen a lot of it. But that was one of those moments where I kind of, you know, I got up out of my chair and I was like, oh my gosh. Like,
and
I did
Zeke's
not...
like baseball skills came in handy, you know, he slid for that fly ball.
That paid off. That was foreshadowing.
You did not. But he did actually.
That's exactly what
I did
happened.
Not think of that until you just said that, actually.
Yeah. Now I want like... someone to get that scene of Zeke holding on to Eren's decapitated head. And I just want like Armin with an umpire's mask going like safe. Like
Mikasa in the outfield is like,
yeah.
Oh my god. You also, James brought up a photo of Mikasa. And she's like cutting off these two, like, Marlian's heads. I think it was Marlian's, right? Yeah. And then I was like, this is a great photo of Mikasa's back end. And he was like, oh, I was more talking about the heads getting
slicing
cut off. But yeah, I was just like, oh, yeah, I mean that too. But
I'm not going to like lie and pretend that I didn't also notice the butt shot, but I mean.
Anyways, Lindsay, you missed out on a very good show, but we got a lot to talk about today, too.
We do. I took massive notes this time around, you know, to, like, get all the context that I missed, because this episode, you know, is basically, like, a huge flashback, focusing mostly on Eren's dad, Grisha, and I was like, okay, I know we got all of this last season. You know, we got to see, like, Grisha's really tragic backstory and his rise into being, like, a resistance fighter and then getting taken to paradise with his first wife and all of that kind of stuff. But, you know, it wasn't fresh in there. So I went and read a bunch of things to make sure that, you know, I kind of knew what was going on, but holy crap. I mean, this was I think we all kind of expected that Eren was going to try and pull one over on Zeke, right? Like,
there was one part where, like, he shows him, like, we're, like, 2 minutes into the episode, right? He's, like, showing a flashback. And then Eren's like, okay, I'm not brainwashed anymore. And I was just like, Eren.
Such a little stinker.
Yeah, I know. I was just like, I couldn't. But, I mean, Eren just, is he an Aries? Because, like, I just feel like he has that no bullshit, like, kind of mentality. I gotta look up whatever his sign is.
Yeah, what's Eren's birthday? If he's not an Aries, he's a Scorpio. But someone put that in there.
And I know chat knows because you all know all. Y'all are just like wild. Yeah. But anyway, yes.
Yeah. So where do you think we should start? I mean, we could go through it like chronologically, I guess. What I got the most out of this episode was how I felt like up to this point, Grisha had really kind of been played as this almost evil character.
Eren's an Aries, by the way.
I don't know about evil, but it definitely seemed like, you know, and
like he'd been manipulating his kids this entire time, right? Like he was
at least using his kids in this scheme that he had to, you know, to take down the royal family and give the power of the founding titan to someone else. And, you know, I think Zeke especially was very much on board with that narrative that, like, you know, when Grisha wasn't able to kind of recruit him to the pro Eldian cause, he basically had like another kid to try again. And that was sort of Zeke's perspective where it's like, this guy really just like, all they ever wanted to do was use his kids for the,
be like child soldiers for the cause sort of deal. And but now it seems like he was way more tortured about it, like the entire time, I feel like, is what we got to see. Like that he didn't just abandon Zeke and Dina, you know, that he was like missing them and grieving them this entire time, and that he really loved Aaron and Carla and actually like put off, like had discovered where the royal family were doing their passing down ceremony, and probably could have went in there and ate them long while before he did, because they do that ceremony every 13 years. But instead of that, he wanted more time with Aaron and Carla. So he put it off and put it off and put it off until what I assume is he probably got some vision via Aaron and realized he couldn't wait anymore. And that was sort of the thing that was revealed, is that the Attack Titan has this secret ability to see the future through its future descendant. I have mixed feelings about that. That seems kind of like writing yourself out of a corner a little bit, but
it did feel like, I guess a little bit like, I don't know if ass pull is the right word, but it's one of those things where I get a little frustrated when in anime or in manga, they're like, oh yeah, by the way, we've had this power the entire time.
100% agree. You know,
it's only relevant now.
100% agree. Yeah. But it's so anime. It's so anime. You know, it's annoying, but it's like it's just anime. Just like Armin being like, I believe in my best friend. Pulling from Sailor Moon. You know what I mean?
I think the one thing that saved it for me was that it does seem like, you know, just given like the reveals that we got and like the, you know, these moments here where like it seems clear that Grisha is communicating with Aaron and with Zeke kind of across time.
Yeah.
And I would, you know, you're going to have to forgive me, chat, but it's been like 3 years since some of these episodes. So I would have to go back and see if like these scenes are planted, you know, super early on, if we're kind of retconning a bit. But it does seem like this reveal was kind of in the making for a while. And so even though the explanation felt a little like, surprise, the Titan can do that. Mm-hmm. You just can. The implications for the story, I thought, made sense.
Yeah. So I think one of the other questions that kind of came out of this too, I mean, there's a lot of, and we can talk about this sort of comparison between Zeke's upbringing and Aaron's upbringing, because I feel like Grisha was a different father to both of them, but it's almost like despite his best attempts to direct, like he tried to direct Zeke to basically, you know, become the Beast Titan warrior program, infiltrate the Marleyan army, betray them for the Eldian resistance army's cause. And then, but in the end, Zeke sold his parents out. Like he found out that the Marleyans were onto them and that they were all going to be killed for treason. So he decided to save himself and his grandparents and sold out his parents.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, when he got another opportunity for a new family and he has Carla and Aaron, he doesn't try to direct Aaron that way at all. It's mostly like, you know, he's trying to have this more idealistic family life, but Aaron is just like full of anger, full of like the kind of rage that I feel like Grisha used to have before he lost his first family. And a lot of that stems to from the philosophical debate going on between what the royal family thinks the Eldians are supposed to do, what Zeke thinks the Eldians are supposed to do, and what Aaron wants for the Eldians as well. And I don't know, I guess I'd like to hear your guys' thoughts on like Zeke's proposal of euthanization and no longer having Eldians at all, because to be Eldian is to suffer, as in his mind. And then we have the royal family who thinks the Eldians are supposed to kind of be this like scapegoat and just sort of take this discrimination upon themselves due to the actions of their ancestors and just sort of like deal with it. Mm-hmm. And then there's Aaron who thinks that is horribly cruel, that both options are cruel, it's not fair, and that the Eldians should no longer have to basically be punished for things that they don't even remember anymore.
They straight up don't remember because they've been, their brains have been cleared of it.
Yeah, exactly.
James, you want to go first or you want me to?
I mean, well, and we were talking about it a little bit off mic too, but the whole, this is one of those areas where, especially in this episode, where like, you know, the word nationalism actually gets like just straight up, you know, dropped. If not for the first time, then for the first time in a long time, right?
Yeah. I feel like Zeke tells Aaron that his views are nationalistic.
It gets so tricky because I think in order to talk about the different philosophies that are being bandied about regarding the future of the Eldians, I think it's a little impossible to not at least like address some of like the allegorical political implications, because as far as just pure world building goes, granted there's information that we don't quite have yet, right? Like when it comes to we got that part this week where Grisha like specified like, hey, like, you know, the people on this island don't even know about these war crimes, you know, why should they be punished for them?
Mm-hmm.
And without the information of like what specifically the Eldians were actually like, you know, how much of the Marleyan propaganda was accurate, how much of the pro-Eldian propaganda is accurate.
Right, because we've really seen things thrown around from both sides, like,
and we don't have like a definitive take yet. Like we haven't seen
what really happened. Yeah.
But if I think like for me especially, it's kind of impossible to ignore the whole idea of, you know, I think the thing that makes it tricky is when Grisha talks about euthanization, I think the fact that his assumption is that, oh, the only way for us to live, or the only way for the world to have peace is if we all die, as if our entire race stops existing. Right. And the fact that the Aaron's desire to not be genocided is framed as nationalism, and maybe it's like a translation thing, you know, maybe it's just one of those instances where like the word has more nuance or different context in like a Japanese context than it would here.
I think what was used in the episode was less about Aaron's personal views about what should happen and more an assumption on Zeke's part, because Zeke saw Grisha's views as national Eldian nationalism, and he assumes that Grisha brainwashed Aaron to have the same views. So I don't think it's so much that Aaron's views are nationalistic because he doesn't believe in the genocide. It's that Zeke assumes they're nationalistic because he knows how his dad was, and he assumes Aaron is the same as his dad. There's a lot of that going on between them, because initially Zeke wants Aaron on his side so bad. He's like, I'm never going to abandon you. You know, no matter what happens, you know, you're my brother and I'm going to be here for you no matter what. I think he really wants to have that connection with Aaron where, despite who their dad was, they agree on it. But at the end of it, they don't. They don't. And I think also it's worth noting that Zeke's views are heavily influenced by Mr. Cassaver.
Cassaver, the original Beast Titan.
Because when, you know, his parents went off to Paradise Island, he was still there in the Marleyan army, and Mr. Cassaver suffered horrible loss. And so he was just a really depressed man who was playing catch with this little boy, like a surrogate son. But he said a couple things to him during that relationship, and that really stuck with Zeke. And one of them was that he thought that they shouldn't have been born.
Yeah.
That he would have rather not been born than lost his family, because his wife killed herself and their son when she found out that he was Eldian, because he had hid that from her. And then she found out that she had married a man and had a son with him that was Eldian. And that was so horrible to her that she killed herself and their child. So
can we just talk about, this is a lot of disturbed people.
Yes.
Okay. Like we're not talking to, we don't have a lot of mentally healthy, securely attached people, you know, like I'm trying to think of like anyone in here who hasn't incurred a lot of trauma. I mean, like, I think
kind of what war does to people, right?
Exactly. I think, I personally, first of all, Lindsay and I covered My Hero Academia, and I felt like if it wasn't complete BS filler, it was like just so much trauma, and I felt like we're having a therapy session every time. Yeah. And this felt like that to me. It was like a big change of tone. For me personally, I really empathized with Grisha and Zeke. And I think it was a little bit unusual for me especially to be feeling empathy for Zeke, but I just was like, this episode was just so heavy, you know? I think Grisha, you know, was motivated by, you know, the death of his sister, which was like incredibly brutal, right? Mm-hmm. And he thought that he was doing something, you know, for the greater good. And he really was not a father to Zeke. You know what yeah. I mean? He was, he thought like, oh, this is such a great plan for the greater good. And it's really like the really sad lesson that like, if you're not good to the people who are supposed to be close to you, like you're really like, you're doing a lot of damage. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, look what Zeke evolved into, because he was essentially like a spy as a child, which is like, aren't you asking a lot from a child yeah. there?
He betrayed them at age 7. Like,
yes.
He was a little boy,
but he would, you know? Frankly, and I think we were all like, oh, Zeke, how did you do that? But then when we first found out, but then it's like Zeke's dad and mom abandoned him and made him a spy when he was very young. And then he had a man come into his life who was extremely depressed and not mentally healthy, in my yeah. opinion. You know what I mean? So it's like he frankly did destroy his son's life in a way, like, you know what I mean? Like, or he really set him up for failure, for lack of yeah. a better word, you know? Yeah. But I think what was so powerful about this episode was just that Zeke went back to see those memories and wanted to be like, my dad sucked. He was awful. And oh, Aaron called him out so bad. Aaron was like, all I see is like a grown man with daddy issues or something yeah. a lot more eloquent. But I was like, no, he didn't. But yeah. that is what Zeke's hangup is. It's like he wanted to see those memories and see some villain and be like, I'm totally in the right. And like, it hurt to be like, actually, you know, your dad was full of regret. He tried to do better. And if he could have seen you, he would have just been like, I love you. And actually, it's interesting because chat was kind of chiming in on that. And they were like, did he actually see Zeke and stuff like that? I have to go back and see what they yeah. were saying. But that was also a little tricky. I think when I was watching the episode, I was literally texting Lindsay and was like, Zeke's the ghost of Christmas past, or like, what the hell's going on right now? Yeah. And now like Grisha can see his sons or hear, you know, like there was a lot going on there. But I really wanted to point out, like, it was like, this was definitely extremely heavy for Zeke mentally. And also, I mean, Grisha, like, I'm like, I don't think I ever really cared that much about Grisha, to be honest. Like, I was like, okay.
He's kind of this mysterious background guy who gave Aaron a key for a really long time.
100%. But then watching this episode, I was like, first of all, he looks young to me. Like, you know what I mean? He was a young father who mm-hmm. wanted to get revenge for his sister's death, probably was too focused on that to even see that he needed to be a good parent. You know what I mean? And then had all this other trauma go down, like following like the betrayal of his son betraying them. Right. And right. so then he gets like the second chance at life, and he really wants to do so good by Aaron that he's betraying himself and doing these awful things. And then Zeke is just like, oh my gosh, he's trying to make up for not being there for me by being there so much for Aaron that he's not even being true to himself. It was all a big commentary on, if you're not true to your authentic self, shit goes haywire, people. That was really what I felt it to be like, you know? Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. For me, it was hard. It was a very hard episode to watch, especially the hug at the end when Grisha yeah. is like, oh my God, is that you? And like, you're so grown up. I'm like an emotional, like, even like saying that, you know? Yeah. And then like being like, when he goes like, I love you, I was like,
he apologized. Yeah.
Throwing my pen.
That's, and then like, you could tell it touched Zeke too. Like, he wasn't completely dead to his dad anymore.
He cried.
Yeah, he cried.
And I didn't know how Zeke was going to react, but that, yeah. I just can't wait for the next episode. Like, I don't even know what's going to happen with Zeke.
Well, and I'm just wondering like how much, because of this whole, you know, with the more than implication, but with Aaron basically pushing his father to
kill
the family and set, I mean, literally everything in motion, right? Like the whole reason that Reiner and Annie and them came to Paradise in the first place and killed Aaron's family, which is what set him on this path to revenge, was because the power of the founding Titan fell into the wrong hands. Into Grisha's head, right?
Yeah.
And so it's like, did Aaron cause, like, is Aaron responsible for getting his family killed? like in that sense, or getting his mother killed.
Wow. Because
if he hadn't, you know, convinced Grisha. Now, again, you could argue, well, you know, and I think what Aaron's philosophy is that they were all kind of set up and doomed to die on that island anyway, right? Like that they were trapped and that they were, you know, left without agency or free will. But I think the thing that I'm really curious to see is like how much, you know, how much does this reveal of Aaron's influence on the past and the fact that like the Attack Titan can see like into the past and the future of like everyone who's ever had the Attack Titan. How much of this whole conflict, the conflict of the whole show, is going to be this one of those things where Aaron is fighting against a problem that he in himself is partially responsible for. I don't know. That was the tricky thing for me to wrap my head around. It's like, well, if you didn't make your father do this, then you wouldn't have watched your mother die right in front of you, and you wouldn't be so obsessed with, you know, defeating all of your enemies and you know, always moving forward and all that. But then, is Aaron now in the place where he's kind of justifying all of that as the means to an end of securing the kind of freedom that he's decided is the be all end all for him?
Yeah, there's some talk going in chat right now about how events happen. And now it's like, oh, well, I didn't look that part up for the refresher of why Bert Holt and Reiner and Annie dropped in to Paradis in the first place. I don't remember what set that into motion. I'd have to go back and like refresh on that. But they're saying that happened before.
Okay.
Before he killed the family. But on the other hand, like the reason that Grisha went and killed the family that day is because he would know through Aaron's vision that the wall attack was going to happen. So like he knew that part of the future. So he knew that was his last chance to go eat them before like it was done. So you could say that like, no, it's not Aaron's fault because that attack on the wall was happening regardless of what Grisha did, but Grisha wouldn't have eaten them without having that future information via Aaron, and Aaron, you know, did push him at that point. Maybe Aaron felt that was inevitable because he knew because the incoming attack. But
time loops.
Yes, yeah, time loops. I enjoy them. Like that movie Looper was really good, for instance. Yeah. Like I enjoy that kind of stuff where you have to like stop and like really think like, oh, this is how all the puzzle pieces fit together. But also it makes my brain melt. So
this seemed like a lot to take in. I'm not going to lie. Like I was like, man, it was kind of like James was saying earlier, like this ability was available to them, but now it's just like suddenly like dropping out of the blue. And I mean, there was just like a lot that was dropped on us.
Yeah. For sure. Before we kind of dive into the allegory stuff that James was touching on, we have a quick ad read from our sponsor that Jackie's going to do here for us.
Yeah. So we'll take a minute. Okay. Yes. So our sponsor is Way. We want to give them a big thank you. Obviously, it's winter time. It's cold out there. James, it's dry and cold in Colorado, right?
It was actually almost 70 degrees today, but it's supposed to snow.
Stupid
like,
Colorado weather. I grew up there, so
like
I know.
10 inches tomorrow. So,
That's Colorado weather for sure. Lindsay, it's cold where you're at, right?
Yes. Okay. I just got back from Leavenworth, Washington, where it was between 28 to 32 degrees Fahrenheit the entire time.
So yeah, there you go. And I'm in California, and for some reason, it's just been super dry out here. So you know what? There is a solution to this, y'all. It's Way, and they have this amazing quench thirsty skin and leave it feeling satin smooth with their Melrose Place body cream. It's fast absorbing to nourish your skin when you need it most. Hydration that prevents dryness. All three of us could use that. And high quality nourishing ingredients like squalene, coconut oil, and kupasu butter and coconut oil. I always love saying kupu. Oh no, I got it wrong this time. Kupuasu butter. But anyways, experience the new Way Melrose body cream and body cleanser. Your body, your way. And okay, make sure you listen closely here, folks. Okay, so you got to go to theouai.com and use Believe, BLEAV, to get 15% off your entire purchase. So again, one more time, 15% off your entire order at theouai.com and the code is Bleav, B-L-E-A-V. And yeah, the Way Melrose Place Body Cleanser and the Way Melrose Place Body Cream, really going to help you stay hydrated with the skins. All right. Thanks, Way.
Thanks, Jackie. All right. So James, we were talking about this a little bit before the show, and I know this has continued to be a hot topic within Attack on Titan discussion. And we've, you know, we've touched on this before on the previous seasons about political allegory or themes that are going on. You know, there have been things written about the series itself and how it may be like pro or con certain like highly controversial viewpoints. Through watching this show, kind of remained in a middle ground where it definitely seemed like it was saying war is bad and fascism sucks and it ruins everyone's life. But then there's these other things that have come up within this episode where it's like...
Sorry, Lindsay's description, just saying that so casually. I'm sorry. Continue. You know,
core beliefs here for me, all right? War is bad and fascism sucks. Yes. And Attack on Titan has done a pretty good job of showing how war ruins everyone's life and also that discriminating against groups of people and, I don't know, feeding children to dogs and things like that is also really bad. Don't do that. There's, like we talked about, not last episode because I wasn't here, but the episode before, we kind of talked about how the rumbling seemed like it had some similarities or could be taken as a nuclear power if you were to kind of like go out. And now the philosophical viewpoints that are lining up also seem to be commentating on some hot topics that are within Japanese politics. One of the big ones that's been going on for a while, but especially
like 80 years.
80 years, but especially started coming to a forefront during when Shinzo Abe was prime minister, which was up until very recently, was an article in the Japanese constitution that keeps them from having an active military force, a military force that can attack. So they have a self-defense force.
They have a self-defense force
from foreign invasion and attacks, but their constitution which was drawn up after World War II, does not allow them to invade or attack other places. And there's been commentary.
It's so weird that it's the Attack Titan that is the.
Why didn't I didn't. Oh God.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Like it's the most obvious, and maybe that's why that didn't occur to me. But
I just thought. I just thought of it like right now. I was like, oh yeah, the Attack Titan. I get it. I see what you're doing.
Yeah.
Hajime Isayama. I see. This is one of those moments where I kind of wish I could just pull up the Bert picture again, because that's a lot more fun allegory, but
yeah.
I really did feel this episode, and you even have that line where Aaron straight up tells Zeke, and again, the show has always done such a good job of being nuanced and of allowing its characters to be complicated. I'm not even arguing necessarily that the author or that the anime is like 100% on board with Aaron's philosophy necessarily. Maybe I'll be singing a different tune in a few weeks. I don't know. But he has that moment where he like tells Zeke, like, I would rather take someone else's freedom before they have the opportunity to take mine. AKA, I want to be able to attack them and, you know, destroy them before they have the ability to destroy me.
Also really interesting about that part? I'm sorry, I'm going to go off on like a mental health thing here. So there's been a lot of like books written about just like how people come out of the womb, you know, and basically they say that you have your personality before you come out of the womb, that basically when you're in your mom's womb, you can hear what's going on out there. You feel her responses to things, and you have your personality set before you come out. And you basically are like, how am I going to adjust to what's out there? So I thought it was very interesting that he was like, I came out of the womb like this. You know what I mean?
They set that up a little bit too, because they show that scene again with Mikasa when he killed those two people who had kidnapped her.
Yeah.
And they frame it in a way to kind of show like Aaron was always ready to kill. He was always willing to do that if necessary. And they make it, instead of it seeming like a force of circumstance where, you know, it was kill or be killed, and this
yes,
kid was, yeah. you know, in this horrible situation. They kind of set it up as Aaron was always going to kill them, and he doesn't feel bad about it either.
Yeah.
And you can, I don't know if we'd ever seen the exact conversation he had with Grisha when yeah. I think they're burning the bodies, actually.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. That's what I thought.
They got a cover for, like, my kid did a murder, so we gotta know.
Like, we're talking about trauma that these people
have incurred. Baby's first murder.
Like, that's, like, really intense.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Their bodies are on fire, and his dad's basically scolding him, like, do you understand what you just did? You just killed two people. And he's like, I just took out animals that look like humans, I think is what he said.
Yeah.
To that extent.
Yep.
And it's like, well, I mean... Yeah, these weren't good people. They kidnapped Mikasa and they were ransoming her, weren't they? Because of her.
Yeah.
Because of her lineage, because she's technically a princess or whatever. Anyway, they kidnapped her. I might have that part wrong, but they kidnapped her and he's just like,
they're bad.
No remorse, which is kind of, I feel like, a little bit in opposition to the sympathy they try to give you in the opening sequence. Because there's those lines in the opening song, which, by the way, hit number one on the hard rock charts.
Crazy. Love it.
Yeah. But there's
does it even have a song. Full version, or is it just like the minute 30?
I haven't heard it yet.
I was looking for one because I like that song.
Yeah,
I know that song is great.
Yeah,
it's
but
amazing.
There's a part where he says, like, I didn't want to pick up a knife, and like I think they kind of do some of the scene there might show the scarf or so. I got the impression during that line in the opening that they're talking about how Aaron didn't want to kill. But this episode really made it seem like, you know, Aaron was always ready to kill even as a child. That's just like you said, Jackie, like he came out that way.
But then to refute that, what doesn't make sense to me was like, okay, so let's say I could honestly see that more with Zeke than with Aaron, because it's like the parents' energy was so focused on bringing, you know, their political cause to be. So like he would have been adapted with like that political cause almost. Like
I could
see that a little bit more. For me, it seemed like Carla didn't really know about any of this, right? Am I wrong? And then
she's just
chilling. She wants to be a good mom. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I don't think Grisha was pushing any agenda on his son, because I feel like for Aaron, not Zeke, obviously.
Yeah.
So because I think he was trying to not do that this time. So it is interesting that he somehow had that mindset already.
I mean, I don't know. That point where it emphasized where I think Grisha was waiting for Aaron to be older before he started
kind of
bringing him in on the whole pro-Eldian thing,
because
it seemed like he's like, I've been keeping this secret, I've been keeping you away from this because I don't want you to like be indoctrinated. And what I got out of that, and again, it's more subtext, but I got that he kind of learned his lesson, and that you can't just brainwash people, or, you know,
100%. I think he learned his lesson. Yeah, but then isn't it interesting that some people are just built a certain way, or they're just, you know what I mean, a certain way, and that it might just be Aaron is that way. You know what I mean?
It's just like, seems like he's been an angry kid for like a long time. I mean, there were some stuff that we saw earlier when he's like running around with Armin and Mikasa, but even at that point in his life, he was like, I'm going to fight the bullies that are chasing us around. Right. Like he was getting into little like street fist fights or something, which, you know, like seemed harmless at the time. And I don't want to even read too much into that necessarily, but it just, as there, someone was saying in the it was Nick said that doesn't mean that Aaron like necessarily was looking to kill people, but he's just fully open to it as a resolution in certain situations. And I mean, okay, but now that's been taken to this. But now that's
Aaron is pretty. I mean, I think we can all say Aaron is very disturbed. I don't think anyone can argue that at this point. Like, I'm sorry. Like, even when you feel like he has, like, I'll be straight up, I don't even know what the fuck Aaron's trying to do right now. I'm just going to be completely clear. I know, like, don't tear me up, chat. You guys are always like, oh my God, y'all are like, you don't know your shit. Like, I'll be honest, I do not know what the fuck Aaron is thinking.
He wants to kill all of his enemies. I mean, that's what he's been saying this whole time.
Yeah, but it's like what does that even mean? And at this point, like, I'm just, like, I think Lindsay posed initially, right? Like, Zeke doesn't want people to struggle anymore, right? So he wants all these people, all the Eldians to just die. We don't need to worry about it. you don't need to suffer anymore, right? And then the royal family, they were like, this is a way for like some of us to live well, right? And then some people suffer, and this is a world of hatred. I think they said it like straight up. And some people are gonna have to suffer and some people aren't, you know? Which, like, let's be honest, it's a harsh world out there, and that is just kind of a reality. Like, some people suffer for no fucking reason, they don't deserve it. And then some people are handed a silver platter, and some could argue that they don't deserve it. You know what I mean? Just life is hard like that, you know? So I'm just like, what is Aaron's, like, what is his big resolution here? Like, how is he, like, what does he think is going to be, like, so great?
I think Aaron's view is actually in line with the, at least at this point, the Eldian restorationists. Like, he doesn't want to go with the euthanization plan, but he also doesn't agree with the royal family at all. Like, the royal family's view, like, I feel like that angers him the most out of everything that we see in this episode. And that, again, is something that feels like it's a little bit loaded and kind of ties back to the political allegory going on here. Because, like, we were talking earlier about the Japanese constitution doesn't allow them to have an attacking military force anymore. And the Japanese... the Imperial Japanese Army did some really, really, really fucked up shit during World War II. We were talking about this a little bit before the show, because it's not focused on as much as American history. We spend more time learning about the Western theater. You might, like, I don't know, learn about Iwo Jima or something, because there's that iconic photo of the Marines raising the flag and whatnot. But we don't actually talk about the war crimes that went on in Asia nearly as much as we do the war crimes that the Nazis committed in Europe. Both were horrible. And there's a lot of similarities between the two. I think I might have talked about it a little bit on an earlier show about how that kind of came to head when the creator of My Hero Academia created a doctor whose name happened to have a lot of similarities to the torture camps and human experimentation that was done on the Chinese during World War II. And he was like, whoops, my bad. We got to change this guy's name, because
you're like, if someone showed up and is like, I'm Dr. Mengele, don't even worry about it. And it's like,
yeah. And you're like,
you can't use that name anymore.
I mean, there's a ton of history there. I mean, I really recommend just like kind of reading up on. James was telling me about some things that were done in Guam that I wasn't even aware of. I mean, I'm more familiar with, you know, the comfort women situation that happened in Korea, and also, you know, a lot of the horrible stuff that happened in China, but it was throughout that entire theater. If you have that context and then you go into this show, it seems a lot like the royal family is saying, we can't have an offensive force, and also we need to continue to be punished for the atrocities that our ancestors committed against these other people, even though the current generations don't have anything to do with that, which is often a common argument you also see in American politics in relation to slavery. You know, this isn't like unique. And Aaron's response is that, like, we're not responsible for those actions anymore. We shouldn't be punished anymore for it. And also we should maybe be allowed to have a nuclear power, aka the rumbling, in order to stave off attacks from Marley, because, you know, we basically just shouldn't be taking it anymore, and we should be able to make a show of force. You can kind of take that argument and say, well, if you look at current events, like, say, like North Korea firing missiles into the Sea of Japan, you might, you know, be able to draw from that why current Japanese people would feel that they need to have the ability to make a show of force to stave off attacks. So this is all sort of like underpinned, I feel like, in this story. It is problematic to an extent, only in that, at least in my opinion, when it comes to the constitutional issue and stuff like that, there's a lot of right-wing politics that exist in Japan still, even within the current party. And, they haven't fully admitted to a lot of the atrocities that went on in a way that the people they were committed against feel is appropriate. There's still a lot of fighting in Japan over whether the comfort women in Korea really happened or not, and there's censorship around those sorts of things. So this is all like really messy. There's a lot to like read, and also maybe you might feel my application here isn't perfect. I'm definitely not an expert in Japanese history necessarily. All this is stuff that I just have picked up and read about through my job, because, you know, when you are looking at a lot of art coming out of a particular country, it helps to kind of know what's going on there and what some of the views are and how those sorts of things happen. So that might be some why you see those sorts of opinions coming off online, and people who are less than thrilled with some of the developments in the show or some of the arguments it appears to be making personally. And then I'll give the floor to someone else. But personally, I feel like Aaron in this story is kind of setting up a false binary. Like, you can make arguments about military force and whether they should have one or not. But I feel like the argument, oh, we shouldn't be punished for the mistakes of our ancestors in the past, is usually thrown out about, let's stop talking about that. Why do we have to keep talking about that? I didn't have anything to do with that. That was a long time ago, which I don't agree with that part. Like, yeah, history is important, and like, it has generational repercussions on people. World War II might feel like a long time ago, but I mean, we still have survivors of Auschwitz alive right now. Like, yeah, it's not. And what happened, you know, what happened to those people, the victims of those atrocities, you know, they have kids, their kids saw how their parents suffered. And that's kind of something we've seen in this show too, about how that gets passed down generationally over and over. And there's anger there, especially yeah, when they don't feel like those they've gotten, you know, recognized for what happened in an adequate way.
So first of all, that was brilliant, Lindsay. Sorry. I was like totally captivated by like everything you were saying. I think I literally wrote that down, like, history is important. And I think that I kind of don't agree with anybody. Like, I don't like Zeke's plan. I don't like the Royals plan. I don't like Aaron's plan. I mean, maybe this is too kumbaya, but literally all of this happened because they didn't want to be truthful. Like, right, they were like, let's erase their memories and create some false history. And it's like, if they were just like, hey, you're LDNs, you have this ability, you know what I mean? And it can be harmful. And like, this is the history, and this is, you know, what you need to be aware of. It's like, yes, there would be evil Eldians, right? But like, maybe systems could be put in place to prevent that, you know what I mean? Or to like somehow combat that. But it's like, we saw how wonderful the people of Parody are. Like, it's like that would, it's like, we don't think that we could teach them the truth. We could make, you know, we could be like, this is what history is, and teach them, you know what I mean? And they could be good. Like, is it like really for the three options we're looking at, no one thinks that that is feasible. And I mean, maybe they're so, these people have seen a lot. So like, I get it. Like, honestly, Zeke's just like, kill him, just kill him, because he's just like so sick of it. You know what I mean? And then like, I mean, honestly, but I wouldn't even want to rank the three options. They're all like pretty awful. Like, I think, you know, like I was saying, like, I understood what the royal family was saying, that like, some people have to suffer, some people don't. Like, that's just like life. Life is hard. But I mean, like I said, I don't know if it's too kumbaya, but it's like, I'm just kind of annoyed that everyone just feels like we have to like go to these extremes. Again, what would be the systems that need to go into place to combat, you know, an Eldian, you know, being purely evil? Like, that's tough, you know?
Yeah, and I feel like they've never really suggested that there's any kind of diplomatic option with Marley, like, at all. Like, I feel like the show hinges on the fact that we have to accept that, like, Marley is imperialistic and will invade and it will attack, and there's no preventing it whatsoever, other than the mini rumbling that they've been talking about, which they feel like would keep people away from Paradise for another 10 years. It's like, so there's no options that doesn't include a show of force.
Yeah.
Well, and that's also the thing that, sorry, really so quickly. Someone said like non-Eldians would still be afraid and hate them for what they did, though. And like, I honestly, like that guts me. That comment.
That kind of healing takes time, I think.
It does. It does take time. But it's also like, again, we're talking about being truthful, right? And it's like, we've seen that the Eldians are humans too, but Marley didn't let people see that the Eldians were human. That's were like, true. They're monsters. This is the propaganda. Right. Monsters. It's like, if you are truthful and you're like, yes, these people have this ability. Yes, they've done past things, but they're human. And yeah. like, just, I'm sorry. I'm like, I know I'm pushing the whole truth thing. And maybe it's again, like too optimistic. You know what I mean? But it's like, I'm just like, I guess I'm just like shook at the how negative all these options seem to be. Sorry. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to comment on that because I'm just like,
James, you were about to say something too.
I was just going to say, I think speaking of the whole Eldian issue, I think that's the one thing that makes the allegorical interpretation of the show so tricky. Right. And I think it's going to remain tricky even once the show is done, is that if we're looking at it from like a metaphorical context, right? I think the framing of the Eldians on Paradis as basically the post-war, post-imperial Japanese who were conditioned into believing that they had to suffer for the sins of the past and were denied the ability to make war on other people, even though people wanted to make war with them. And I think all of that, it aligns in a way that makes a lot of sense, whether or not you necessarily agree with the implications of it. But I think what makes it tricky, and in a good way and a bad way, or in a potentially bad way, is that on the one hand, I think the show has done a very good job of demonstrating that the people in Marley themselves are not inherently evil. It's more like the machine of imperialism that they basically inherited from the Eldians. And again, if you want to like make historical parallels, right? The idea that, you know, World War One was where it started, but World War II is really where America became kind of the military superpower of the world. And where the whole idea of, you know, the military industrial machine that, you know, American society kind of pushed on the world had kind of took center stage. And you can kind of argue that in the same way that, you know, the Eldians allegedly were the ones that first controlled everything and then they were defeated. It doesn't really square one-to-one with history, but you can see how it kind of tracks on like an emotional level. Mm-hmm. But the thing that makes it odd is that within the fiction of the show, you know, just within like the purely fantasy world building of Attack on Titan, the Eldians are like a race that possess abilities and destructive powers that are kind of inherent to their bloodline, which isn't to say that they deserve to be discriminated against, but it's basically a world where race is a thing. Like you can be born with this innate ability to turn into a walking meat mecha.
Yeah.
Which makes it hard because if we're looking at the Titans as like metaphor, that's one thing, but it's like, it's, you know, so many of the really horrible things that were done in World War II, for instance, both by the Imperial Army and by Germany and Italy, was this idea that certain powers deserved to dominate other peoples because of inherent racial differences that set them apart, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the Germans believed that they were genetically, racially superior to the people around them. And, you know, if you go back, there was a lot of that going on in Japan too, where even as they were talking about trying to create this whole pan, you know, Asian alliance.
It's the idea of the Yamato.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
The rest of Asia needs to be guided and led and ruled by Japan because there is something about the Japanese that people at the time and some people today believe is inherently superior. And I don't think the show is arguing that the Titans are that the Eldians are like superior to anyone, which is good, but yeah. it is just weird. And I don't know if the show is ever going to find a way to resolve it. It is weird that there is still like a magical, like literal racial distinction that makes the Eldians different from everybody else in the world, mm-hmm. In a way that you could argue is kind of legitimately scary, right? Like the idea that they can turn into these monsters, like that's you know, that's that is a very different context than a country that, you know, starts becoming a military power and trying to like take over other countries. You know what I mean? Is that like making sense?
Yeah. Theo's pointing out here, and I had thought this while you were explaining it, that Attack on Titan kind of has an X-Men issue. And this was there was a similar plot in the original X-Men about how, you know, mutants had these powers and they were discriminated against for being mutants, but also that they were trying to regulate their ability to use their powers or not because they saw them as inherently dangerous to non-mutants. And it's something that's come up, you know, in comics and in media in different ways at different times. And I would say that similarity is fair. Someone else also said, and I wanted to touch on it also before we ran out of time, that even with Grisha, which we saw at the end, even with Grisha's original feelings of, you know, restoring an Eldian state and overthrowing Marley and becoming a dominant power again, that's where he started at. And by the time we get to the end of this episode, and he's been able to see the future via Aaron and what Aaron's ultimate goal is, which we don't actually know, but Grisha was able to see it. He regrets his actions and is scared of what Aaron plans to do and tells Zeke not to let him do it. So there's some foreboding there that's pretty heavy.
And can I just say, and I'm trying to look it up to make sure that I don't get it wrong, but the voice acting performance from Grisha in this whole episode, and I want to make sure I give credit to the voice actor because I think it's Yuto Uemura, I believe. Okay. But I want to, he did such a good job of communicating like the anguish that Grisha is going through and just the really complex emotions that he's struggling with. I think the moment where he kind of collapsed,
Hiroshi Tsuchida.
When he collapsed and just like screamed, like I killed them. I even killed the children. Are you happy now? Like, is that what you wanted? That's one of, I think, the most powerful moments that the show has had so far. Where you just realize that literally everyone involved in this has been broken. Like there's no one's getting out of this clean.
Mm-hmm.
Except maybe for like Connie. Armin. Or Armin, except for right? Who? Like, we have a couple people who are like Connie and Armin. Like they're like, you know, they...
Yeah, they'll be good boys forever, right?
I know. I love both of them so much.
Yeah.
On that note, let's end on that. Connie and Armin are good boys forever. Yeah. Also, Lindsay mentioned earlier, Historia had the longest pregnancy.
I did say that.
Period.
And a tweet to Jackie. It was like, God, longest pregnancy ever. What's Historia doing?
Yeah, we're like, where is this girl? Like, what?
She's in that barn, right? Like she's in like that.
And then this episode kind of refreshed it. Oh God, are we getting into like a Jesus metaphor too? We don't know who the actual dad is, and she's gonna have the baby in a manger.
Oh my gosh!
Oh no!
I can't.
No, but
who knows?
Oh no! Someone just said Armin killed a ton of innocents in Liberio. I don't remember that. Liberio.
Oh yeah, he did. Yeah, when he became. Oh, that's true. He's also scarred.
Armin's out.
He blew up all those.
If you think about it too, Connie's killed a lot of people as well. I guess just like we said, they're all broken.
Sasha was okay, but then you know.
Yeah.
You saw where that got her.
Wow. Jeez.
And then I was thinking, I didn't get to say it last time, but we're gonna get Falco back. Because though he went
and actually Titan, Falco is good boy, and he's gonna get the Jaw Titan now. So
So he should regain his ability to humanity shapeshift thing now that he ate the Jaw Titan, so hopefully he'll be back. Too bad about his brother though.
I'm just imagining
you guys are killing me.
I'm just imagining him and Gabby like sitting down for like an afternoon dinner as adults, and it's like the ending to we were talking Hunger about Games. The ending to Hunger Games.
That is legit how this is gonna end. Well. It is legit gonna be like one of them like traumatized to the point where they're like not functioning. Because am I right? Like PETA in the end like can't even function. Like
it's like catatonic.
Like, yeah, he's like catatonic, and Katniss is just taking care of him, and they live like in the middle of nowhere, and they're like.
I think he's gotten better, but I think she was saying that like he's never gonna be where he was.
Yeah,
like I think he was like talking and stuff, and but they like they were never gonna be like a white picket fence family.
You're broken.
Oh yeah, Connie's mom was titanized too, so he lost his mom. So he's
oh yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Okay, you guys, the whole end of the show is just going off the rails.
Hey, we've got 5 minutes, and Alex wants to know what we thought of the music in this episode. Does anyone remember the music?
Really good. I've been thinking the past few episodes that the score is really killing it lately. The music's always been good in Attack on Titan, but I think just because it's been so heavy.
Yeah.
Like an emotionally just really dense. I think the music has done a good job of getting all those emotions across, especially in that whole scene where they were confronting the royal family. Mm-hmm. I thought the score was killing it.
I'll be honest, it hasn't even stuck out to me because like the dialogue has just been so intense.
Yeah.
Like I really am like, I have no idea what we are going to expect for the next episode here. Like, I'm just like, this was, what's going to happen to Zeke following seeing this? Because to be honest, like the whole thing kind of uprooted his, it uprooted a lot. Like, it's like, first of all, I think Zeke was just like, I felt like Grisha's motivations were because of his sister's death and he was blinded by that. I think Zeke's motivations has been blinded by kind of just like fucking up his dad's plan, for lack of a better word, you know what I mean, and like really villainizing and hating his dad. And so that moment with his dad and also seeing the memories I don't know if Aaron was straight up manipulating him or not, but like, you know, I mean, something was funky there, you know what I mean? So I'm very interested to see how Zeke's going to come out of this episode. It's pretty clear Aaron hasn't changed a bit.
Yeah.
It's pretty damn clear. Yeah. So it's like, for me, I'm kind of like, okay, well, what are we going to see Zeke do now? Which has been kind of, frankly, something very interesting about this anime is that I feel like, and someone, I shared the comment earlier and someone was like, I don't know what Aaron is planning until the end credits roll. And I think that's something that's been very great about this anime is that like, just things are switching so often and that's human. Like,
people, I also want to remind everyone that Zeke ruined my boy Levi.
I was going to say, where's Levi? What's our stump boy been doing?
Him stump boy.
Okay, so he is going to get his face sewn back together and they're completely going off
the rails. He's gonna make him like some sort of like robot.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. He's gonna be like cyborg. Yeah. He's gonna like have to. He has to live. I don't know how they're gonna do it. I don't know how that's gonna work out, but he's gotta live.
Well, I feel like again, like they had to have shown him surviving because he's like got something to do later,
right?
Or maybe just at the end of the anime,
James, it'll be like, half of his face is split open and he's like blown to bits. Like I'm like. I mean, I'm just being hopeful that they somehow turn him into a cyborg. I really don't know, but it's just like he is really
a Harry Potter style.
He has to live because he and Levi have to have, or not he and Levi, he and Zeke need to have the ultimate final showdown. Oh, I don't know what it's going to be, but like Levi has to kill Zeke or the reverse. I don't want it to be the reverse, they're just gonna, that like, has to happen.
The blades like permanently on his arms, so he doesn't.
Yeah, like Dororo. He's gonna be like Yakimaru.
I'm not gonna lie. That would be I would watch.
I'd be there. I'd be there for that.
Annie is also still sleeping. Someone pointed that out. So I mean, she's still a player on the board.
And ever since I saw those awesome OADs where it was like Annie's noir detective story,
I still want to watch those.
They're so good. I want that girl back. I miss OAD. Her.
Like, I loved Annie. Yeah. Annie was like such a baddie. Like, she was just like, I don't know. Like, I felt like Reiner and Bertholdt were kind of like, just Bertholdt's just a big softy. Bertholdt is kind of a good boy in his own way. Again, a good boy who killed tons of people because Connie and Armin, but he was in that like good boy / murderer category. Anyway, Reiner is all over the place. I just felt like Annie's like someone I wish I could be like. Like, she's one of those people who's like really good at like not being emotionally reactive. Like, she's very in tune with herself and knows how to like reel it in. Like, I feel like I'm definitely, I mean, I don't want to even say like I'm like Aaron, but I'm definitely very reactive. You know what I mean? So like Annie's like one of those people, like,
Jackie
for some potential. But I'm just saying that like, she's just like, what is it like to be someone who's just not reactive? Like, I think we saw her show a little bit of emotion when there was the flashbacks and I was like shook by it because like, she's just like a machine to me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Female Titan and like stomping around. I mean, they couldn't get one up on her. Yeah. Yeah, before we wrap, someone else pointed out in the comments, and I plan to touch on this. Next episode's title ties all the way back to the first episode of this dang show.
I love it when that happens. That's so sad.
So the first episode of the show was talking about, like, to you in 2,000 years. Like, it was a letter from 2,000 years in the past. And then next week's episode is, like, it's basically like the worst postal service ever, because it took 2,000 years for this letter to get here, and we're finally getting it. But yeah,
when I first saw that title of episode one, when I first started watching Attack on Titan,
yeah,
I thought that, like, the whole shtick was going to be that this was like a post-apocalyptic future, and that this is like Earth, like, you know, 2,000 years from now, and that we're going to, like, learn that there's, like, this, you know, and that's why you have, like the German names and the Japanese names, and, you know.
I mean, that would make sense. The map.
That would make sense.
If you take the map of the world of Attack on Titan, it's just our world flipped upside down.
Yes. Yeah.
So Paradis is Madagascar. It's weird like that. So, yeah, maybe, you know. Maybe we got hit by a giant asteroid and the entire world went 180 degrees. Kind of like what happened to Uranus. And it went, you know, like that, and that's why it rotates weird and everything.
And then some, like, alien, like, meteor bugs came in and gave people the power to turn into giant meat robots. So
it's all,
you guys, I'm sorry, this episode has just been so off the rails, especially the last, like, 10 minutes here. I'm like, oh my goodness.
Good to
have Lindsay back.
Hey, glad to be back. So I think that about wraps it for this show. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. I think we had more people than usual this
time. Oh my God, hold on. Did you read Lost Thieves?
Nick, what are you doing?
Episode 81.
Sorry, that's me. That's me at work.
No, I just thought that was... Okay, we're done here. I'm sorry. Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt. That's it.
Apologies for not getting back to you or your email right away.
I mean, it only took AOT, what, 8 years? We're going on year...
2013.
No, you're 9? Is 2013. Yeah, you're 9. 9 years. That's not bad.
Wow, guys.
Everyone knows that
we are so old. Sorry.
Pandemic years don't count. Pandemic years don't count.
10 years ago, almost. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Are they going to be? Is that what they're doing? They're that freaking space aliens. I'm just look. I saw Darling in the Franxx. All right. At this point, I'm prepared for any anime to just be about space aliens now.
Yeah, it's fine. It's always... Nikhil wants to know how old we are.
34. Lindsay and I are almost on the same birthday, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like 3 days older than Jackie.
Yeah.
We're turning
Aries, like Aaron. Just kidding.
Yeah. And yeah, James is the baby, quote unquote. Yeah.
I'm going to hit the big 30 here in just a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, I still got a couple weeks left in my 20s to party it up.
What's James? Oh, yeah. James, what's your sign?
Yes.
Gosh, Aquarius, I think.
Oh, yeah. If your birthday, is it coming up, like, soon?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Oh.
James is the nicest Aquarius I've ever known, then.
Hey.
Yeah, Aquariuses are kind of, well, now we're going into a whole.
Yeah, this would be like.
Yeah, yeah.
We're Jackie horoscope.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, everybody. Thanks
Us Aquariuses don't deserve to be punished for the sins of our past, okay? I think that we really need to, like, let us have our Attack Titans, you know?
Yeah. Oh, my. Okay. That fine note.
All right, everybody. We'll see you next week with a letter to 2,000 years in the future. And thanks for stopping by and subscribe and stuff, you know?
Like, smash that bell button.
Yay, yes. Follow.
Bye.